Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I am your host, Lori Siebert. Our producer tonight is Neil Heaver. This is Lessons with Leaders, a show where we have the opportunity to understand what makes the Lehigh Valley great and the leaders and people who get us there. We want to understand what drives them, lessons they would like to share, and why they call the Lehigh Valley home. My guest this evening is Cassie Hilgert. Cassie is president and CEO of ArtsQuest, one of the largest nonprofit arts organizations in Pennsylvania. Founded in 1984, ArtsQuest is dedicated to providing unparalleled access to the arts and culture as key tools for economic development in the region. Each year, it presents over 2,200 concerts, art, and educational programs, with 65% of this programming available to the community for free. Prior to being chosen as CEO, Cassie was Senior Vice President of Marketing and Advancement for ArtsQuest. Also, Manager of Community Relations and Philanthropy at Air Products, Director of Marketing at Good Shepherd Rehabilitation Network, and a graduate of Penn State University. Welcome to the show, Cassie.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
We really appreciate you being here. You are President and CEO of ArtsQuest. I'm not sure you've gotten used to that yet.
I have not.
When you were a little child and someone asked what you would want to be when you grow up, what would you have said?
I wanted to be an oceanographer when I was a kid. I grew up in North Carolina until I was about 11 years old, and we used to take annual trips to the beach. And to me, to be in the surf, to be at the ocean, I was completely fascinated by it. And it was in a little community. It was at Holden Beach, North Carolina, where you could run around as a kid without any adult supervision. And I used to go out on the pier and spend the day with the fishermen who would catch sharks, little baby sharks. And I just became fascinated with sharks. So from that point on, I wanted to be an oceanographer, and there were no two other ways about it.
And did you continue in science then? Did you?
To my first chemistry class, and I realized probably oceanography was not going to be my path.
So you grew up in North Carolina, you said, until you were 11.
Yes.
So what was family life like? How many kids in the family?
Sure. I have an older brother, and my parents are still living here in Allentown. My brother and his family live in Houston with my niece and nephew, John and Elizabeth. So we're a small family. But a very tight family. And I've got my partner, Susan, and my two little fur babies who are rescue kitties.
Oh, fur babies are wonderful. So your parents brought you here to Allentown then from North Carolina at age 11?
Yes, my father worked for a little bank that was headquartered in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where I grew up. It was called Wachovia back in the day. So it had not moved northward, but he was recruited by PPL to come up here and run their pension investments. And I remember very clearly the night that my parents came in to tell us we were moving, because they brought in a map of the United States, and my father had an offer from Wisconsin or Allentown, Pennsylvania. And both of those seemed so far from North Carolina, it was terrifying to think about leaving North Carolina. But he eventually took the offer from PPL, and we made the move up here in 1981.
That must have been hard leaving your ocean.
It was really hard leaving my ocean, and certainly, you know, it was the first move I had as a child. Even though I was born in New York, we moved to North Carolina when I was so young. I don't remember living in New York. So to me, North Carolina was everything. So to come up here was foreign in every sense of the word.
So was there anything in particular that you grabbed onto, having that passion in North Carolina, the oceanographer dream?
Yes.
Was there anything that you grabbed onto here when you moved here?
Yes, in a funny way, Winston-Salem is home to the only other Moravian settlement that remains in the country. So I grew up with Old Salem. I grew up in that Moravian community. There was a Moravian church right up the street from us that we went to for every Christmas. And so when we moved here, that we found Bethlehem fairly quickly. And as an 11-year-old, I just thought then that every city had a Moravian settlement. Little did I know we lived in the only two in the country. So that was a sense of home, though, a sense of familiarity. I was familiar with the religion, the faith, the look and feel of it was very familiar. So that helped a little bit.
And your career has evolved over time. So let's talk about that for a while. First job out of college and where that took you.
Sure. My first job out of college was with MedStar Television right here in the Lehigh Valley. It was between my junior and senior year. I actually had an internship there. and it went so well. It was 40 hours a week. At the end of the summer, they offered me a full-time job. And so I took that job as an assistant producer of television and healthcare news, which was really fascinating because it allowed me to travel all over the country. And I was 21 years old. I couldn't even rent a car.
Yeah.
So to sort of run around to all these markets and set up the station and make sure everything was going to go okay for these 3 days of tapings that we would do in each market was really kind of exhilarating. And this was before Garmin and smartphones. So when I could rent a car, I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how to get around. I had to print out those directions right ahead of time and spent more time lost on freeways than I did at the actual shooting location. But it was very formative for me that, you know, you just took your things and went.
How empowering.
It was wonderful. It was you know, here's your expense account. So take the client out at night. And, you know, during the day, here is your job. And it was so exciting to me. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
What did you study in college?
Communications.
Okay.
So this, you know, going to MedStar, it was literally in the formative days of the internet. This was still CompuServe when you dialed up for internet access, and they had very few computers at work. But because I was in college, I was used to using them. So I became sort of their tech expert. And I think that's what ingratiated me into that culture early on. That was sort of my space and my place. And MedStar had that environment where they would hire people very young, typically, and they just sent you out off on your own. And while they didn't necessarily pay very well, you got a lot of experience. So that was a great first job.
And in college, did you have any leadership roles in college?
I don't know about leadership roles. I spent my first year at Ohio University because I wanted to be a journalist, and I was fortunate enough to get into the Scripps School of Journalism. But after my first semester in journalism classes, I also realized this is probably not where I want to end up. So I transferred over to Penn State, and each semester there, I did something different. So I was an RA, a resident assistant, for a couple of years. That was formative, I guess you could say, in leadership, but it was much more in how do you build a community. You know, I had a floor of 70 female students. And if you ever want a challenge in leadership, try to work with 70 female students and get consensus on anything. I was a little sister at a fraternity for a semester. I focused on that. I was a opinion writer at the Daily Collegian for a semester. So I tried to do something different each semester. And that was the beauty of Penn State. Literally, you could go out and find a whole new community each semester and start over if you wanted to, build a whole new personality, try on a different character and see how it felt and try new things.
Well, it's interesting because just in what you've told me so far, I feel like you have tried on a number of different things and have had a number of different characters, but that shows that you have some flexibility as well. So from MedStar, communications, producing, lots of empowerment there. They gave you lots of responsibility. What was your next role?
So my boss, who hired me as an intern at MedStar, had made the jump a few years before I left to Good Shepherd. And she actually called me and recruited me over to Good Shepherd then. They were just, there was a new president there, Sally Gammon, who had just started a little while ago, and the organization was in transition. And they were looking for someone to work in their communications department. They were going to embark on a very large capital campaign. So I had been in healthcare as far as on the TV and the news side, but really had not spent any time in the institutional side or in the network side. So that was challenging to me. Plus, while I didn't stay in journalism as a career, I love writing, still do to this day. So being involved with communications and marketing also had a big attraction to me. So I went from MedStar over to Good Shepherd.
And how long were you at Good Shepherd before you went to Air Products?
What's odd is that at both MedStar and Good Shepherd and Air Products, I was there 5 years in each job, approximately. I don't know why that was a magic number. It just seemed to work out that way. So it was 5 years at each place.
My family, we used to say we had 7 year
right
itches.
Must have been the 5 year itch.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally you land somewhere where it lasts a little bit longer. We hope you're going to last more than the 5 years.
That makes two of us.
Yeah, yeah. So Air Products, what did you do at Air Products?
When I was at Air Products, I started in their PR department. So I was representing about half of their business lines. And did that for about 18 months before making the jump over to community relations philanthropy, government relations. So that was such a great experience because you're working for a global company, you're looking at global issues of a major gas and chemical company. It couldn't have been more different than healthcare. So that to me just was a whole new horizon. And for me, I think that was helpful. What I know about myself is that I need to be challenged with new things. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't get much newer than Air Products. So loved that role, and it really gave me an opportunity to look around the Lehigh Valley and get involved with the nonprofits here in this community and see what they were doing on the front line. And that was something that once again opened my eyes to, you know, what does community mean? Where are you going to be as a person? What are you going to look back on one day and say, here's where I had a little bit of an impact? And I think that's the first time I started to have those questions sort of percolate in the back of my mind.
It's so interesting because as you've spoken, when you talked about being in that community in Winston-Salem, when you could run around and mm-hmm. even parents weren't around, and then you felt and were drawn to the community here in Bethlehem, again, you're now talking about what was kind of missing when you were at Air Products and looking for that nonprofit community making a difference. And each of the roles you seem to have had were leading and building up on all of these. So what are some of the highlights of those career choices that have helped you be the leader you are today?
Well, certainly failure. I think when you try things and they don't go well, I have learned more from those situations than from successes. I mean, if I think back to my first boss at MedStar, I learned more when we had conflict than when we had consensus because, you know, you had to work through a situation. You had to overcome something and get to a common goal starting from uncommon areas. And that, to me, taught me resiliency. You have to get up one more time than you fall down. And that, to me, I think is a key not just to leadership but to success. There is a lot to, obviously, pedigree and degrees, but to me, at the end of the day, your fortitude and your ability to keep getting up and starting over is probably one of the most important key indicators of success.
That's amazing. I would like to go back and rehear that quote. That was great. We'll have to listen to this again so that we could write this down and grab that. That it's very inspirational and powerful for people to hear that because I think so many people see leaders, think they got there from whatever means, whether they lucked out, they knew someone. And in fact, it is having this conversation that we're learning. Leaders have a lot of failures. We learned that when we were speaking with Rick Anderson, who had said something very similar, learning from mistakes. So learning from failures, learning more from the conflict than the consensus. So sometimes it doesn't feel good.
No, in fact, most of the time, you know, if it feels good, I think you may not be doing it right. I have to give a lot of credit, not just to my parents, but to my big brother. He was 4 years older than me, and that's where I do think I learned failure, whether it was playing sports against him or whatever it was. He was always bigger, stronger, faster. But what he taught me was that getting up again and go try again. So I think a lot of it dates back to that for me, and that was fortunate for me. And as I think about it as I get older, really important to my success.
And does he know this yet?
No, I will never tell him either.
Well, I have four brothers, too, and I think it is important to recognize when you have male counterparts or colleagues, peers, siblings, you do learn a lot as a female, too, about competition and navigating and problem solving. They play
Absolutely.
A role in that
As I grew up in North Carolina, we had a lot of kids in our neighborhood, and there was always a two-on-two football game somewhere. And there were a lot of little boys in our neighborhood, and my brother wanted to play,
mm-hmm.
But he had a little sister. So his only choice was to make sure I was as good as some of the guys we played against. So, you know, we would practice all the time just so, you know, we could go out and win. And I remember those feelings on a Sunday afternoon when, you know, it was cold and you came in and you were covered in grass stains. But, you know, if we beat the kids across the street. That was a glow I remember feeling for a week, and just that closeness with my brother.
I agree. I had it too. Do you feel that learning some of that competitive spirit as well from him has bode well for you throughout your career?
No question. We compete over everything to this day. So if we are both driving home from the same location, it's who can get there faster. It is unspoken, but always, always right there. So yes, much of my competitive nature comes from him.
Yeah, that's great. And it helps in our careers as well, and helps in that leadership role as well. When you first took over at ArtsQuest, Lynn Olenoff with Lehigh Valley Live interviewed Jeff Parks, who said about you, "She's not one to be told she can't do something," as he was initially told when he started Music Fest in 1984. "And I see a knack for flexibility and creativity in you. Does that come naturally to you, or is it something that you've had to cultivate in the arts arena, the creative aspect of it?"
I think I've always had it. I don't know that I've been very aware of it. Believe it or not, Jeff was probably one of the ones who showed that to me. He was the one who talked very openly about, when you hear no, just figure a way around it. And I don't know anyone had been that blunt to me in my career. You know, it had always been, well, try harder over here, or think about it from this way. He was so straightforward with, I'm right. This is the decision we're going to go with, and I'm just going to find a way around it. And certainly there are pluses and minuses to that, but it was such a freeing lesson of, when you see something and want something, just go get it. That's it. Forget everything else. I don't want to hear everything else. Just go after that.
Right. So if you can see it, you can find the way to make it happen.
Otherwise, it's an excuse if you don't get there.
So did you have that in your role prior to being CEO and president? You were already working on that kind of vision and working with Jeff on that.
Yeah, well, I think Jeff was so good with, and he always has been with this, when we lay out a common vision, he will let you run with it. And we do share that from a leadership standpoint. Once we all know where we're going, he is going to step back and say, go get there. This is your part of the puzzle. And I certainly learned that from him, and that's always been my leadership style. So a lot of autonomy, a lot of creativity, a lot of ability to figure out how we're going to get from point A to point B without any kind of micromanaging. And that, I think, was a great test ground for me.
Interesting. Figuring out going from point A to point B takes us back to your MedStar days when you were having to figure out how to get from point A to point B. So you actually were interning for your president CEO position back at MedStar. Folks, we are talking with Cassie Hilgert, president and CEO of ArtsQuest, one of the largest nonprofit arts organizations in Pennsylvania. We are ready for a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation on Lessons with Leaders. Back in just a moment.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guest this evening is Cassie Hilgert, president and CEO of ArtsQuest. And we're talking a little bit about Cassie's story, what has brought her to where she is today. We talked a little bit about you being an RA. I thought that was really said a lot. You said, how do you build a community? You learned how to build a community with all those young ladies. And that you were an opinion writer at one point, too, which yes. Means your opinions were valued.
Well, I certainly wanted to state them. I don't know if they were valued, but I wasn't shy about giving them.
But when someone asks you to be an, I would love to be an opinion writer, but when someone asks you to be an opinion writer, you feel like it's valuable.
You do. You feel important. That was, really an exhilarating semester. There's a huge responsibility that comes with, I'm going to put something down on paper, and people are going to read it, and you're going to get feedback, and you really are putting yourself out there. It was it was a shock to me when I would write some columns, and I would get a lot of blowback. People disagreed, and I, you know, this is before your online trolls. This is before the whole social media explosion. But I think it was a great lesson for me to learn about feedback and how do you keep your composure when someone is either immature or unrealistic in their response to you. How do you continue that discourse? How do you continue that dialogue when you aren't being treated that way? So that was a real eye-opener for me to get letters, to get people calling me in my room, which means they had to go look at my number.
Right.
So, you know, take a lot of steps to get to you to tell you what they really thought. So that was very eye-opening to me. And I think a great lesson in dealing with public feedback and input and staying very open to both the positive and the negative of that feedback.
Well, and going along with learning from failure as well, you also learn then when you are going to give your opinion to make sure that you've thought through your position as well as you can.
Yes, I think between both that experience and being an RA taught you a lot about empathy.
Mm-hmm.
That you need to look at your opinion from the other side to see if it holds water, see if it stands up.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with an RA. I had so many residents who were from different countries, different socioeconomic backgrounds, and yet we all had to share this common living space. And how were we going to maintain that in a healthy way for so many weeks in order to get through the semester? So it was fantastic from that standpoint to learn about different viewpoints. Even when I was an opinion writer, to be able to talk to people on the floor and say, here's what I want to talk about. Here's my opinion. Tell me why it's wrong. Let's pick this apart. And we would spend, you know, weeknights doing that, which is one of the beauties of college.
And it all goes back to community. I read something that, in one of the articles I read about you, it said that when you were first starting, I believe, as president and CEO, that you were doing a listening tour.
Yes.
And you were walking around with the staff listening.
I do that to this day at least once a year. I get together with each department just to update them on what's going on from my standpoint and my workload, and then to hear from them what they see with the organization, what's good, what's bad, what are opportunities, what are threats. And it wasn't just with staff. It was with volunteers who, you know, are the backbone of ArtsQuest. And I think I got the concept of volunteering, but I never understood the impact of volunteering until I came to ArtsQuest. And to see this many people, over 2,000, literally pick up that entire organization and run most of the programs. It is not an overstatement to say that without those volunteers, we cannot put on the programming we do. You can have great ideas. You can do a lot of wonderful marketing. But unless someone is going to be there to help set up the tents alongside of our operations team and run these programs from Music Fest to our cinemas, we just can't open the doors every day. So to listen to them and to stay very close to them is critical to me. And then just to one of my favorite things at Music Fest or Chris Kindlemart or even any activity in the ArtsQuest Center is just to walk up to people and ask what their experience has been. What do you like? What don't you like? Where are you from? And get their feedback there. We get so many fantastic ideas from that, and we constantly use those ideas. At Music Fest, we ask staff to submit ideas every day. Whatever you see, just jot it down, send it into one email inbox, and we review them each year. And we do that with all of our members, which we have almost 3,000 members, and our volunteers. And we'll get 60 to 100 ideas just for Music Fest. And of those, I bet we probably implement 30 to 35 of them. These can be little things to great big programming shifts. And to me, if you're not staying that close to the people you're serving, if you don't stay close to the people that are accessing your programs, you really don't have the right to come up with new programs or to tell them what they should be seeing and enjoying and patronizing. So I love the reciprocal part of that listening tour, and I think it is critical that you stay that connected to as many of your audiences as you can.
That's amazing, and it's wonderful for our community actually to be aware of that and know how connected you are in improving the programming and what is available to them, the community that you're trying to serve, but also respecting the passion behind those volunteers, because volunteers are passionate.
They are passionate, and we all know that that can cut both ways. But, right. You know, we've got stage managers, site supervisors at Music Fest that have been running it for over 20 years. And if you don't come into that relationship with a sense of humility, for as few years as I've been there, 9 years now, I think you're missing out on an enormous asset.
Now, you had mentioned you're doing these asking folks questions, so this is probably going to play right into what was going to be my next question. Going off of that Lehigh Valley Live article again, you had said, quote, "The community is changing and ArtsQuest should be the conduit to make those ideas come to life. We want to stay in the business of providing the unexpected," unquote. So some of that, the unexpected, could be you're gleaning ideas from that community and those volunteers as well. But to continually want to bring the unexpected, you have to think outside the box, maybe be a bit of an adventurer. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself an adventurer?
I don't know about an adventurer. I consider myself an outsider. So even though I have lived here a long time, I still feel like in some ways I just moved here. So when I talk about wanting ArtsQuest to be that conduit to the changing community, I see how this community was the Lehigh Valley back in the very early 80s and how it is now. I see that not just at my work, but in my neighborhood. You know, my neighborhood, the block next to me 10 years ago was a cornfield, and today it is an entirely new neighborhood, mostly with New Jersey transplants. And I'm fascinated walking around and talking to them about their experience moving here. Sounds the same as mine back in 81. Mm. It can be a tough place sometimes to break in here. There is still a dynamic that is very insular. And just like anything else, that can have an upside and a downside. But we as a community, the Valley is changing, whether you look at ethnicity, female to male ratio, socioeconomic, everything about this Valley is changing. That excites me. I love that. And I want ArtsQuest to be the convener of that dialogue around that change. What does it feel like? What does it look like? How do we further that dialogue among different communities? So more an outsider than an adventurer.
More of an outsider than an adventurer. And I think that's an interesting perspective, too, to say it's as if you, when you just had moved here, you still sometimes feel that and you see that in new people coming here. And maybe it's also about making them part of the community, too.
It's about making them part of the community. I do love, you know, I've been here long enough now that I can't drive down a street in the Valley and not look at something and go, I remember when such and such was there. So I do have those roots, and I think it is important to always keep those roots in mind and to honor that tradition and that history. But how does that arc towards the future? And how do we take the best parts of that history and tradition and create the next chapter and write the next chapter? So I love watching that happen.
Looking for the unexpected, not being told you can't do something, what would you like to do with ArtsQuest from what it encompasses now to where you might see it going? And please share with the community all that ArtsQuest
sure.
is as well.
Sure. So, you know, ArtsQuest is the umbrella organization for so many things. We, from a building standpoint, we run and operate the Banana Factory. We run and operate the Visitors Center at Steel Stacks. We own, run, and operate the ArtsQuest Center at Steel Stacks. So in addition to that, we also do 11 festivals throughout the year. So all told, and I think you mentioned this in the intro, it's about 2,200 camps, classes, and concerts a year. 65% of that is free. And we do that through the support of members and volunteers, sponsors, of which we have about 192 that we work with on an annual basis. Certainly food and beverage. So when you come down and purchase food and beverage, you're helping to support all of that free programming, which also includes the Levitt Pavilion at Steel Stacks, which is one of our more popular music series. Every summer we do about 50 free shows, family-friendly shows, Thursday to Sunday, from mid-May to mid-September. So what we want to do as ArtsQuest, what we keep wanting to do, is to use arts and culture as an urban revitalization tool. And that's where I want to see ArtsQuest get a lot more elbow room and spend a lot more time, not just here, but in other communities, talking about and advocating and demonstrating how that can work. When we look at the south side of Bethlehem, when the banana factory opened in 1998, it was not a place that you wanted to come down to necessarily on the south side. And today, with that building, we are out of space with the glass studio. We have a waiting list for artist studio space. We need to grow that entire building. So we have seen that visual arts center anticipate the demands of the community back then. It's now time for another banana factory. On that space where we are, we are looking at what are the needs of the community today and tomorrow. What's coming? The South Side is changing every day. And there are new communities moving in. There's new businesses moving in. And we need a new cultural center. So our team is working right now with artists and with a number of others to design what is the banana factory that will meet the needs of the future. So that's going to be a big focus for us for the next 3 to 5 years. But I would like us to tell the story from a broader perspective for the sake of the Lehigh Valley. What has happened with Steel Stacks, I think, is so unique and something that we should be screaming from every mountaintop. Mm-hmm. There was a public-private partnership that happened there that, when you look at today's political climate, it never would have gotten off the ground. But this magic moment in time happened, and we were able to put forward a vision of Steel Stacks. The community got behind that. The public sector laid the groundwork to make that happen, and then the private sector got behind it. Arts and culture is a very unique tool in that toolbox for urban revitalization because it allows access to the communities it's bringing in, and it also allows you to reflect the communities that are already there. I think we should be talking about this on more of a national level and what we've been able to accomplish here. It is just as important to me, and I know this can be almost hearsay to a lot of folks, but it's the next step in the history of Bethlehem when you look at Bethlehem Steel and its impact, and now Steel Stacks and its impact, and of course starting with the Moravians and their continued impact today.
It's the convener. We go back
to
that.
It is the convener.
The convener.
Yes.
And I know that even, and I wish I could remember off the top of my head here, I was just talking with someone from another town, and I said, listen, people need to look to Bethlehem.
Yes.
And what they were able to do here.
Yes.
With Arts Quest and Steel Stacks, et cetera. And, you know, maybe some of that comes from people were willing to listen at that time because they felt like they had to all come together as a community to lift
what
everyone
just happened.
Out.
Right? There was a big failure.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And what happens at a failure?
Mm-hmm.
You are pushed to reinvent yourself. You're pushed to try new things. And it's just easier to push yourself after failure than it is after success. We talk about that a lot internally as a management team, that we never want to succeed without trying. We're much happier if we fail and give it an effort.
Mm.
So, you know, to me, succeeding without trying is dialing it in. And it has told you nothing. And you've learned nothing. But if you have failed, you're going to learn something from that and improve. You're going to change. And we all know the only constant in life is change.
Now, when this all was spurred on, that memory of the failure was very fresh in our minds. As time goes on, it will start to fade. So we don't want to have to constantly give ourselves negative messages about failure, but what might we do to continue to promote the support in the community of this organization, the revitalization? I want to go back to your thought when you were that little child on the beach with the oceanographer, and you were talking to the fishermen, and they were showing you and sharing with you and bringing that passion to you. What is Arts Quest doing for children's programming? I know you do have some. How can we pull people in our community, the adults, to get their kids into some of these programs so that now our kids, it's not that our parents or the grandparents have to have that memory of
right.
Bethlehem Steel and hanging on to it and let's make sure we keep this alive and well.
That's right.
But let's get our children involved because now all of a sudden we've got those little Cassie Hilgerts who are running around saying, maybe I want to be an artist. Or even if I don't want to be an artist, what the arts bring to people for empathy, for understanding, for convening.
Well, and I'll be very specific from a job skill standpoint. We know from a number of studies that exposure to the arts drives creativity, and the number one skill set that employers are looking for today is creativity, the ability to solve problems. That's why I think it's so important to expose kids to the arts. And we actually serve over 30,000 youth each year. Music Fest gets the headlines. Chris Kindlemart gets the headlines. Even Levitt Pavilion gets the headlines. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, we impact so many different communities. They just don't get the same ink or the same coverage, if you will. With students, we work very closely with the Bethlehem Area School District on after-school arts enrichment programs. We have a literacy arts program with the Bethlehem Public Library on a weekly basis. We do P's and Q's, which is an introduction to music, at the Arts Quest Center every Saturday. So we have always had programming for kids. Peeps Fest is mm-hmm. a two-day celebration of all things Peeps, where we have mm-hmm. about 10 to 11,000 people come out over those 2 days. But what we also do go back to as an organization is we will have specific programming geared to kids. However, almost all arts are for children anyway. So we used to, back in the day, have a stage at Music Fest just for children.
The kids' plots.
Kids' plots. We learned over time that kids like to go to Volksplatz and dance. Kids went to Festplatz and danced. They danced to music, and being exposed to music was the important part of Music Fest for kids, more than just a singular stage geared just towards them. It's like saying, here's a stage just for adults. You wouldn't even know how to begin to program that, because people's likes for music are so varied. It's the same thing with kids. So for us, we wanted to get them to see many more different styles of music at Music Fest instead of just at one stage. So you will see us spend a lot of time in the coming years developing new programs for kids. We were fortunate, thanks to the support of two generous donors 2 years ago, to hire a director of education. And Lisa Harms, that has been her sole focus, is working with the Bethlehem Area School District. She's working with local educators across the community to find what gaps exist out there as far as exposing kids to arts, because we know that's the first thing that gets cut in any kind of a school situation. So how do we plug that hole and get kids in and unlock all the excitement that comes with being exposed to the arts?
Wonderful. Folks, we are taking a break. You are listening to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse, and my guest is Cassie Hilgert. We'll return in just a moment.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org. or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have as a guest this evening, Cassie Hilgert, President and CEO of ArtsQuest. We were just discussing all of the programs that are available for all the folks in our community, and especially we were highlighting what is available to children. And I think so often people think of ArtsQuest as just being arts, when in fact you just explained that it's not just arts, it's also music and the importance of music, the importance of being exposed to that creativity, problem solving. I know myself, when I was in elementary school, we were bused to mm-hmm. the local college to have art classes. And it was very important to me at that time as well. Made a big difference. You felt like you could create something.
Yes.
Even if you weren't always, you know, as artistically skilled as maybe the next person, you still were able to create. You mentioned that you were doing programming and connecting with people in the Bethlehem School District, the Lehigh Valley. ArtsQuest serves everyone in the Lehigh Valley. Are you taking steps to help with Allentown, perhaps, as well, Allentown School District?
You know, what we're doing with the Bethlehem Area School District is, one, they will always be our home school district and our home partner. We are developing some other programs that we hope we can take outside of Bethlehem into both Allentown and Easton, and even go beyond those two cities into areas like the Slate Belt. So for us, we'd love to be able to take programs like the one we created with the YWCA called Creative Aging, which is bringing musicians and other artists into senior homes and senior residences to use arts and music specifically. Once you get that kind of a program, it can travel. So Bethlehem will always be our launching point, but we would love to get out into both Allentown, Easton, and the Slate Belt area.
That would be wonderful. I think the Lehigh Valley would benefit from that. So thank you for thinking of that. So that's one of the areas you're looking to expand upon. I can't help but mention, though I didn't want to mention because I don't think it should matter, but you are one of the leading female executives in the Lehigh Valley. Do you think about that as it might relate to being a role model for other women, your girls, young girls, that little girl running on the beach?
I think about it when people ask me about it. I think that, I have certainly had positive and negative experiences that I could attribute to being a female. I can attribute having positive and negative experiences to when I was 25 years old versus 35 years old. And, you know, when do people start to listen to you? I think it has certainly had an impact on my career. I have gone through the experience that so many other women have in that journey. But at the same time, I think there has been tremendous change. And when I look back on the mentors I have been fortunate enough to have, I can tell you I've had more male mentors than female mentors. And the male mentors have been extraordinarily proactive and supportive in reaching out and pushing me. So I do understand it. I appreciate the responsibility. I'm very cognizant of it. But every day I wake up, my first priority is my staff and what we are doing to continue to grow that organization and to offer jobs to them, jobs that sustain families. So to me, that's what I think about first. I don't think if I'm male or female, or if the decision I'm making or how I'm communicating it is more male or female. So it is certainly an attribute, but something that I hope one day we aren't leading with when we're talking about leadership.
Exactly. So let's go back to kind of summarizing some of the leadership skills that you feel you have today that were prompted from experiences you had either when you were young with your brother in some of those other jobs. If I had to ask you quickly, what do you feel stands out most that has benefited you in your leadership role, perhaps?
Just get up.
Get up.
Keep getting up. That's a message and a lesson that from my father to my mentors, to my mother, my brother, have all taught me either subtly or not so subtly. You just got to get up one more time, then you fall down.
And what do you see then in your staff? You said every day you think about them and taking care of them and that everyone has jobs. Do you feel that you're also passing on some of those leadership skills for them in the roles that they have? As you mentioned, Jeff Park said to you at some point, or the staff, hey, just go get it done now. Do you feel like you're doing that for your staff as well?
I sure hope so. One of the things we try and we embrace as a team is we are very entrepreneurial. So we are not afraid to break something down and build it back up again or throw it away altogether. We like to push ourselves to have a model. For instance, the model that supports this free programming is unlike models you will see at most arts and culture organizations. We don't allow the status quo to drive our decision or to be an excuse. So I do try to push the staff, and I think I have been as much a part of that culture as I'm now trying to create that culture of we don't rest on what happened last year, and there are no sacred cows. We have had discussions all over the board about if you were to start this organization over, what would it look like? Those are worthwhile exercises because you may just get one or two nuggets out of there that you would not have thought about if you're just thinking about delivering the programs you do today and the way that you deliver it and just have a 5% growth. What if we radically changed all of this and started over again? And that's what I want my staff to feel comfortable with is try it. If it doesn't work and we get egg on our face, what's the worst thing that happened to you? You got egg on your face. You're going to get up tomorrow and you're going to keep going on and you're going to have your family to go home to and you're going to have other things in your life. But this is something that when we get this right, whether it's a program or a budget or a new capital campaign, when we get it right, we change lives. And that's the beauty of what we do at the end of the day is we create experiences, whether it's for the third generation of Music Fest festival goer, to, you know, that toddler that comes into the visual arts program for the first time between us and the Bethlehem Public Library. We change lives. And that's why it's important to try. And that's why we are obligated to make sure that what we do is of the highest quality every single day.
And that goes back to just arts, I guess, in general, creativity.
Sure.
And kind of trying new things on. We have a saying, throw the spaghetti on the wall to see what sticks.
Absolutely.
You know, and sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't.
And what's more fun than making a mess?
Right. And that entrepreneurial spirit, too, with also encouraging your staff and your volunteers to give you ideas and implementing them, because then they know their ideas are valued as well.
And they're probably better than yours, on the whole.
Right. That's great. So female executive, you're involved in the community as well on a number of organizations. Do you feel any pressure from that as well? Or you really just come with your hat on as being a solid member of this community in ArtsQuest?
I think if you're ever at the point where you're feeling comfortable where you are, you're probably not going to contribute anything. So to me, I get butterflies when I go into board meetings because I'm now representing arts and culture, which is a different sector of the community. One, I don't think has gotten the attention, if you will, and its impact on job creation and on quality of life and that being a true attribute when it comes to growing businesses here and recruiting businesses here. So I'm excited about those opportunities to be able to talk about that both on the LVDC board with Don Cunningham and the excellent board that he's put together, all the way to the Mincy Trails Council and you know, providing leadership opportunities for young boys. How does arts and culture play into that? How does it play into leadership development of young men, where I think in the past, from a stereotypical standpoint, we wouldn't think that's the most important thing, as important as it is to go out and, you know, get dirty or play sports or do whatever. There is a lot when it comes to arts and culture, and we talk about job skills, that we need to teach in young boys just like we do in young girls, that creativity is independence, it's problem solving, and it is what is going to separate our workforce from the workforce of tomorrow on a global standpoint, and I think arts and culture is a phenomenal way to do that.
It's interesting. My son is very interested in music and music production, but he has said to me, when I have said, do what you're passionate about, he has said, but Mom, I have to make money.
Every person goes through that. It took me 20 years to get around to that and realizing that, you know, when you follow your passion, everything else tends to follow.
Yeah, and good things happen. Generally, toward the end of the show, we'll do something called quick time questions. So let's see if we can go through a few of these things. Describe yourself in a Twitter size way. And do it from a personal standpoint, not from ArtsQuest.
Hashtag I make playlists.
Oh, I make playlists. I think I read about that. Tell
me
about that.
Yeah,
you're a big music person.
I am so, you know, I'm loving Spotify now and all the other streaming music services, but I still have, you know, I've got my 10,000 song library on my iPod, and I love to, you know, waste 2 hours on a Sunday and just find a mood and try to match songs to it. And whether it's making a 20-song playlist for myself or a 60-song playlist because, you know, a friend of mine's having a party for the weekend. I love to do that.
Or someone's taking a drive.
Love it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
driving
playlists.
Music. Yeah.
Oh, by seasonality is the best.
And do you download or do you buy CDs?
You know what? I'm so angry because I've bought LPs, CDs, cassettes. I feel like I'm on my fourth iteration of you know, the same song.
Right.
Yes, I do purchase, but I also do a lot of streaming services.
Yeah, I purchase too because I worry that I'm going to lose my music on my iPhone. So I figure I support the artist by buying the CD.
Yes, I do now. When I was
then
in college,
I
yes,
it.
When I was in college, I was a criminal. I was stealing it all.
So you are a big music buff person. What about art? Do you ever dabble in any art yourself?
Not me. There is no one who has less artistic talent than I do, whether that means singing or picking up a paintbrush, but I am an enormous appreciator of it. So I will seek it out, whether it's galleries or new artists from a music standpoint.
And we have a great group of artists in our Lehigh Valley.
It's an amazing group.
Too. Just a lot of people. So most memorable event in your career in the Lehigh Valley?
I was part of the employee response team at Air Products when Hurricane Katrina blew through New Orleans. So to be on that team that assisted all those employees and their families was probably one of the more meaningful moments in my career.
You're a true caretaker, I think, Cassie.
Oh my gosh, I don't have a maternal bone in my body.
Your fur babies, your staff, you've been saying it. That's good to hear. Any childhood story that affected you today?
I think moving was pretty traumatic, but what that taught me was, you know, you can lose everything that is comfortable to you and known, and you're going to survive.
Okay, good. If you could pick a different career, what would it be?
Oh, yeah, well, first of all, it would be careers. So on Saturday, I'd like to race sports cars, and on Sunday, I'd like to be a singer in a band, and on, you know, Wednesday, I'd like to work in the FBI.
Sorry. So you'd like to be a singer in the band, but you said you can't sing.
I can't hold a note in a bag.
Yeah, nope. Me too. Nope. I said, oh, if only I was given talent. I'd be the first person to jump on the stage and sing.
But I'm a phenomenal lip syncer, but I cannot carry a note if my life depended on it.
Yeah. And what was the first one you said?
Oh, race car driver.
Oh, race car driver.
Yes.
Any particular car you'd like to race?
Formula One.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I would love Formula One.
I know. I always say, gosh, if I just knew, I wouldn't get caught. I'd love to kick it down. We've talked about learning from failures. Normally, I would ask how you've learned from a setback. Was there anything in particular or just kind of in general?
Just in general.
Okay. How would your staff describe you?
Oh, I hope they would describe me as open and transparent and accessible.
Very good. Open, transparent, and accessible. And what do you do for fun outside of work besides your music?
Oh.
Playlist.
My goodness.
Do you explore the Lehigh Valley?
I do explore the Lehigh Valley. I love cooking. I love going to restaurants. I love exploring neighborhoods. So I will pick a neighborhood, whether it's outside of Philly or in Bucks County or up north, and just spend the day and go explore all the nooks and crannies of that community. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Do you travel?
Love to travel. It's just finding the time to travel. It's easier, it seems, to do day and weekend trips. So that to me, half the fun is getting there and the drive and where you pull off the road and what you see there.
Do you ever find that you're seeing or looking for ideas for Arts Quest?
I'm always looking for ideas. It's you know, what do you see as the gaps in your community? And when you go visit other ones, how do they address some of those gaps? So yes, I purposely will go out and see other festivals in some situations. And in other situations, I will be in the middle of having just an amazing experience, whether it's at a restaurant or just sidewalk shopping. And that's where I want to spend a minute or two and pick apart what is great about this feeling right now. What is it? Is it the storefronts? Is it the people? Is it the parking? Is it all the things you don't really pay attention to? And what little nuggets can we bring back to Bethlehem or the Lehigh Valley to help change it?
You just said, you know, the little things that people don't always pay attention to. You even said that in getting those ideas from your staff, even the little things can make a difference sometimes.
It's almost always the little things. You know, people think we spend all our time listening to, you know, tomorrow's artist and going out and signing them to a show. And that's not what makes our events successful. It is all the little things, from bathrooms to parking to ticketing to how you're greeted when you show up. Those things will help influence more your interaction, your experience, than the show itself.
Yeah, very good. What attributes do you feel make a good leader?
Directness, communication, access.
Directness, communication, and access. Directness, how would you say that makes a difference in a good leader?
I think when people understand exactly where they need to go and what success looks like, there's more time spent on creativity than interpreting what you may or may not have meant. So I think it is incumbent on any leader to be very direct with either their employees, with their shareholders, with the community. Here is what we do, why we do it, and how we do it. And here's how you can participate in it. I think if you're not direct, I think if you don't tell people and show people where they fit in that process, you're going to stumble out of the gate.
I just want to sit here and listen to you. I'm really enjoying this. We're wrapping up. We have just a couple minutes left. So for young people, what should they do or shouldn't they do? Do you have anything off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, you should try anything and everything. To me, some of the greatest things I've learned were things I've never tried. And every job that I've had, I've said this to a number of people that I've worked with, I've never done the job I have. So whether it was in television production, had never done it. Worked in a healthcare network, had never headed up a capital campaign from a communication standpoint. When I went over to Air Products, never had been in philanthropy or government relations on any level. And certainly coming over to ArtsQuest, had never done sponsorship. But I just have an inherent faith, and I think we all can do this. You can do it if you just go out and try.
That's wonderful. Cassie, thank you so much for being here
with us today.
I have learned so much and appreciate you sharing all of your stories with us and experiences and successes with us as well.
Thank you for all you do.
So we want to invite everyone to participate in any ArtsQuest activity organization and could become a donor. What is the website for ArtsQuest?
We actually have six of them, but if you want to know our programming website, I would go to steelstacks.org to learn more about ArtsQuest as a nonprofit, artsquest.org, and certainly bananafactory.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Our best to you, Cassie, and to your ArtsQuest family as they continue to bring art, creativity, and the unexpected to our Lehigh Valley community. Thank you to Neil Heaver, our producer, and especially to our listeners. Be your best with purpose and passion, and you will be a leader. Have a lovely tomorrow.